From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, we've got a great show ahead for you today. We've got a feast day from last week, which is the celebration of the life of Saint Bernadette, the famed visionary of Lourdes. We'll be speaking with Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Lourdes, Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity, about this incredible saint. Just a couple weeks ago, we celebrated Divine Mercy Sunday. Of course, those are the revelations that came through to Saint Faustina, and we consider her a saint because of two miracles that were worked through her intercession, one being from Bob and Maureen Digen. We'll be speaking with them about the miracle used towards her canonization. It's an amazing story. And check out my TV series on EWTN on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, They Might Be Saints. This episode looks at the life of Bishop Frederick Barraga. Trekking across Michigan's wilderness earned him the name the Snowshoe Priest, but his heroic virtue bringing the gospel to Native Americans and immigrant miners may earn Bishop Barraga sainthood. So check that one out, coming up on Wednesday, April 24th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And my other program, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, airs on Saturday, the 20th of April. Paray-le-Monial, this is one of my favorite episodes. We visit Paray-le-Monial in France, where St. Margaret Mary Ellicott first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart. I explore the origins of this cherished devotion. You can watch that one on Saturday, April 20th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Later in the show today, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project like we always do. For today's date, April 20th, we've got our Sorrowful Mother of the College from Quito in Ecuador in the year 1906. And the Might Be Saint of the Day is Blessed Chiara Bossata, who lived from 1858 to 1887 in Italy. And the question of the week, what does it mean that a crisis or other illness cannot produce the cure in a true medical healing? I'll do my best to answer that one later in the show. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week. We talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. On Saturday, April 13th, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, received an audience his Most Reverend Eminence Cardinal Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the Dicastery to promote a decree regarding a new miracle that's been attributed to the intercession of Blessed Elena Guerra, the founder of the Congregation of the Oblates of the Holy Spirit, known as the Sisters of Santa Zita. And she was born in 1835 in Lucca in Italy, and she died there in 1914. And the story behind this miraculous healing is that on April 5th, 2010, Mr. Paolo, while he was busy pruning a tree, he fell from a height of about 6 meters, and he was transported to the hospital in an unconscious state, and there he was diagnosed with a very serious head-brain injury with suspected brain death and systemic complications such as pneumonia and hepatitis. The following day, he underwent craniotomy and decompression surgery and frontal basal lobectomy. And after the operation, he was transferred to intensive care with a reserve prognosis. And on April 10th, the CT scan, highlighted a worsening of the patient's condition, so much so that he was expected to die. On April 11th, the attending doctor interrupted the sedation that supported the patient for 24 hours, and the following day, he no longer showed any signs of a neurological reaction. On April 15th, the protocol was opened to declare his brain death. And from April 10th through 27th, the patient remained suspended between life and death. And informed of this very serious condition, the members of the Charismatic Renewal of that place began to organize moments of prayer for his recovery. From April 17th, they addressed their invocations to Blessed Elena Guerra. And considering the persistence of the man's serious conditions, the prayer was intensified and extended for 9 consecutive days. On April 27th, 21 days after the 21 days of hospitalization, doctors found an improvement in the patient's condition, who responded to painful stimuli and was breathing spontaneously. 2 days later, he was transferred to the surgery department, starting first passive and then active physiotherapy. On May 14th, the patient was discharged in good condition. The further checks carried out monthly and then annually highlighted the patient's good state of health and the absence of alterations resulting from the trauma that he suffered. And this was from the website for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, going through the miracle that's been now approved by Rome that will lead to Blessed Elena Guerra now being Saint Elena Guerra. You can find out more if you go to the Facebook page of They Might Be Saints. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give it a prize out to an emailer who writes in with the fastest correct answer. Winners receive the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. And last week we talked about the cause of the servant of God, Aloysius Elucuria, who lived in California. And there have been several venerables, Bishop Gallegos, Patrick Peyton, who also lived in California. But who is the only U.S. canonized saint to have lived a significant amount of time in the Golden State? That was the question from last week. And the answer was, of course, Saint Junipero Serra. He was born in Mallorca in Spain in 1713, and he died in Carmel in California in 1784 in New Spain, which, of course, is in the United States now. And writing in with the correct answer was Elamir Gatas from Tallahassee, Florida. Thanks so much, Elamir, for writing in with that answer. You win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary. Now, this week, we're going to be talking today with Elizabeth Ficicelli about Saint Bernadette. The question for today is, St. Bernadette had her visions of Mary in 1858. What other bishop or proved Marian visionary saw her visions 1 year later in 1859? Again, we're talking about Bernadette with her visions in 1858. What visionary, approved by the local bishop, saw her own visions in the year 1859? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Lourdes Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity, about the great saint, Bernadette. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We have various feast days throughout the calendar year that celebrate miracles in our church. Of course, these big ones, Fatima, Lourdes, Guadalupe, and numerous others. Divine Mercy Sunday is an example. And we also have these occasions where we celebrate the saints and the people who are associated with those miraculous phenomena. And just this past week, we had the feast day of the Visionary of Lourdes. And of course, we're talking about St. Bernadette Subaru, who in February 11th, 1858, began the first of her 18 visions for this girl, the age of 14, who went on to become a nun and retired in Nevers in France, where her body lays incorrupt. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by one of our favorite guests, and that's Elizabeth Ficicelli. She's the author of Lourdes Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity, and she's a true expert on St. Bernadette. Welcome back to the program today, Elizabeth.
Hi, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to talk about Lourdes and St. Bernadette, and I think that when we talk about Lourdes, we're really talking about a very special place, place unlike any other in the entire Catholic world. And when people ask, they know I travel the world for the television programs on EWTN, and they always say, you know, where should I go on a pilgrimage? And of course, I have to say Rome, because home sweet Rome. but I always point people to Lourdes because I think it's such a special place. And if you're Catholic and you go there and you can't get excited, maybe you shouldn't even be Catholic in the first place. I think it's such a meaningful place. And so I wanted to ask you today, in your experience, I know you've been to Lourdes many times yourself, and you've written these books about St. Bernadette and about Lourdes. What is it about Lourdes? What is the true meaning or miracle of Lourdes?
You know, I was thinking about our conversation this morning when I was at Mass, Michael, and I know you and I have talked about Bernadette. We've talked about the miracles, the specific miracles. But what God really put on my heart today was just to reflect on and be grateful for the actual miracle of something like Lourdes from the standpoint of, you know, we have a God that loves us so much that first he sent all those prophets through history, right, to tell us, to warn us. And then he sent his son to show us how to live and love and to suffer and die for us and resurrect and open that whole, you know, life of freedom in heaven and redemption and so forth. But it doesn't stop there. This God loves us so much that he sends his mother to continually tell us when we're off track. And, you know, I do a presentation called the Age of Mary, and I'm looking at her apparitions and especially about that time of Lourdes. It actually is prior to that with Rudebach in 1830. Right. But our Blessed Mother begins to give these very strong messages there in Lourdes and in Fatima, you know, that we need to reorient our life. We need to come back and put God at the center. We need to pray. We need to do acts of penance because we are going off the rails. Mm. And maybe why it was so impressed on my heart to just talk about that whole general, wow, we have an amazing God who continues to love us and send his mother to guide us, because we're in a mess, again, always, but we're in a mess right now in our current day and age. In every aspect you can think of, we're in a mess. And so we need this message. So I guess I felt like the Lord was reminding me not to just think about Bernadette and the apparitions as this quaint little Catholic story and a beautiful place to go. It is a beautiful place to go, a powerful pilgrimage, but that he really wants to meet us in our mess. He wants to meet us in our humility and our simplicity, like Bernadette. He doesn't usually appear to presidents and prime ministers and royalty. He appears to the simple. He appears in places that are off the beaten track. He wants to be involved in our life, and his Blessed Mother, it comes to us to warn us and to tell us, put it back at the center. So I think it's such a miracle that Lourdes exists and exists to this day, and it is so much what the bishop told me when I was there interviewing him for that book, that it's not a museum, it's not a shrine to commemorate something that happened in 1858, but it is a living sanctuary, and you can feel the presence of the Lord there. You can feel the presence of Our Lady. The miracles continue to happen, and not just the physical ones, but spiritual ones. And so it is just beautiful to see there is this place on earth where people can gather in peace, and people can come and be in humble and receive confession and be cleansed and embrace their cross, whatever that may be. And so it is a great, great miracle and a great gift. And I do, as you say, encourage your listeners, if you're at all possible, to make that a trip as a Catholic pilgrimage. It is unlike really any other place I've been.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. We're talking today with Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Lourdes, Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity. And of course, with St. Bernadette's feast day this past week, it's such a great opportunity for us to talk about Lourdes. And when anybody who visits Lourdes, and I guess myself included, I'm always awestruck with how immense it is, the cathedral, the basilica there, or multiple basilicas on site, the expanse, all the pilgrims from around the world who come there in procession each and every night. It's truly mind-blowing to see how large it is. And then we trace it all back to the 14-year-old girl, St. Bernadette Subaru. It's amazing that even when you consider the commercialism, the shops and the the way that the town has risen up around those visions of St. Bernadette. It's amazing to think of those humble origins of the place. So I think it's worth talking about St. Bernadette. How did this all come to be? Who was Bernadette, and why do we see such a great outpouring of support from around the world for this young and simple saint?
Well, Bernadette is a young and simple saint. You said it well, 14 years old, very poor, probably one of the poorest people in all her town, very little education. She was simple in every way, not remarkable, and would have just been kind of tossed to the side in most civilizations, most societies. And so there's nothing remarkable about this girl, but this is who God uses, like that plain, you know, clean sheet of paper to do his work on. And this is who he will send his mother to begin speaking to. And, you know, in the beginning, people are skeptical. They're doubtful, her own family, but certainly her parish priest, the police, very much so. And here is this young child that has to stand up to such adversity. She's a child who had adversity from the earliest stages of her life with health. She had several health issues that stunted her growth, that caused her to have asthma, that, you know, weakened her. The poverty was the adversity also that kept her, you know, it probably perpetuated her health problems because they lived in a very, very damp, dire kind of one-room. It's called La Cachot, the lockup. It was the former jail. I mean, this family of six is living in this horrible conditions. And she couldn't do well with her catechism because it was delivered in French and she spoke a local dialect. So she just struggled at every stage. Didn't seem to be a complainer about it, but this is who the Lord uses. And she will have to, you know, not only receive these messages, but stand up to all this adversity because she believes in what she's given. And I think it's that beautiful, simple obedience she demonstrates, the desire not to be in the spotlight, the desire to be just very simple and direct in her communication, repeats what the lady has told her, doesn't waver, you know, from the story, doesn't embellish it, never seeks the attention. And I think that's what makes her such a credible witness. And certainly, I would think this is what made the bishop of her time approve these apparitions in a remarkable four-year span of time. I mean, it's just unheard of. But he was, you know, alive with her at the time, and he could interview her first and foremost, and then all the witnesses. But she was such a credible witness because it wasn't about her. It was about Our Lady and what the messages that she was given.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Lourdes Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity, about St. Bernadette and the River Feast Day from this past week. And when we talk about the miracles of Lourdes, of course, there have been these many thousands of healings that have been reported there, and a much smaller number that have been fully investigated and validated as being without natural explanation. But we see in one of the apparitions where the Virgin Mary tells Bernadette to wash in the water, and then people see her do this, and some people they think it's strange what she's doing at first, but then other people begin to go to that water as well. Talk a little bit about that tradition of water in Lourdes.
Right. You were right that people were, I would say scandalized is probably a good way to say it. Mm-hmm. They were scandalized at first. Here's this girl, you know, digging in the mud and trying to drink muddy water and wash herself and eating weeds. But when they returned to that spot later that day, they did see this bubbling clear water coming up from the ground, and not that Bernadette gave this message. She never said, "Oh, well, the lady told me, you know, this is going to cure people." She just was doing it out of obedience. You know, wash in that spring, you know, eat those weeds, and this is all acts of penance for the sins in the world. And so this is one of Bernadette's mission, besides being a faithful relayer of the messages, was to do acts of penance. She would do this for the rest of her life. So she's there modeling that. But lo and behold, in 24 hours, miracles start being attributed to this water. So this water would be a very big draw for not only, you know, all of Lourdes and then all of France and then all of Europe and beyond. But we still have access to that water to this day. We have the opportunity to be submersed in the baths. You have opportunities to use the water taps throughout the shrine, you know, to drink, to wash in, to emulate that. And yes, miracles do happen. But I think at the same time, we have to remember that this was originally instructed as an act of penance. We are still called to this day to do acts of penance for our own sins, first and foremost, but the sins in the world. So we have to follow Bernadette in her example. But the water, it has shown remarkable healing properties, although there's nothing chemical in it. The mayor at the time, thinking he hit a gold mine, had the water tested, and it has no particular properties in it, like a spa, you know, might have a spring spa, you know. But it nonetheless, and what Our Lady had said to Bernadette, and she relayed this to other people after the fact, is that it's not the water, but it's the belief of the person you know, that can bring about these results. And of course, God's will has to be mixed in that, right? He doesn't cure everybody, but that water is still available today, and it is, I think, still a draw for a lot of pilgrims.
Yeah, it's truly amazing, the phenomenon of the water of Lourdes. And as we wrap up the interview today, I think when we consider these saints throughout history and visionary saints especially, we think that somehow that the visionaries of Lourdes or Fatima or Guadalupe, they sort of get the crown of sainthood just because they saw Mary. They get sort of a double bonus there, and they don't have to have much else going on. But with each and every person who's canonized, they're always looking at the life of virtue of that saint. And it's somebody that we're supposed to emulate. And that's the whole point of sainthood anyway, is to hold up these great examples for us, give us an example of how to get to heaven ourselves. And so when we look at Saint Bernadette, what would you say are the aspects that the faithful around the world have seen in her life or that they try to emulate of this great saint of Lourdes?
Well, I see the characteristics I mentioned earlier, that simplicity, humility, obedience, not seeking the limelight, and she carried this with her, you know, for the rest of her life. After the apparitions were approved, her parish priest protected her and put her into the hospice run by the sisters right there in Lourdes so that she could be out of the, you know, the probing eyes of the public, and they just wanted to make her like a celebrity, you know, and she didn't want any of that. That repelled her. That she never saw herself as anything special. And so she carried that into religious life with her. And I think, like you said, Michael, it's not that she had visions, you know, of course, that made her a saint, but it's living, trying to keep that virtue of humility, simplicity, obedience when everybody around you, even your, you know, the sisters in your order, you know, people coming to visit her in her convent, constantly wanted to single her out and elevate her in some way. And she had an extra battle, as visionaries do, to try to maintain that virtue. And she held on to the end, you know, she really did. And I think we can look at her, and she's one of my favorite saints because she is so accessible. That 14-year-old, uneducated, poor person, you know, you don't have to have these great accomplishments. You don't have to have these great titles after your name, all these skills and abilities. God can use a willing heart. And that's what he's just looking for, willing heart, trust, and obedience. And she really emulated that. And that's, again, the miracle of Lourdes and something we can call upon her for intercession and certainly model the life that she showed us.
Very well put. Well, this is a great time to focus on St. Bernadette Subro, the visionary of Lourdes. Her feast day was last week. We're so grateful to you, Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Lourdes, Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity. And for people who want to find out more about you and your speaking and your retreats that you lead or any of your books, what's the best place for people to go?
Yep, just my name, ElizabethFicicelli.com, and you can find everything there.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for joining us on today's program.
God bless you, Michael.
God bless. That was Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Lourdes, Font of Faith, Hope, and Charity, Great Reflections on Lourdes and the Life of the Visionary, St. Bernadette Subaru. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I also like answering questions at presentations. I give about 20 talks a year at different Catholic parishes or shrines or events. These days, I've been speaking a lot about Eucharistic miracles because it lines up with the Eucharistic revival. The USCCB, the bishops, have been encouraging parishes to highlight content related to the Eucharist, so various places have had me speak about Eucharistic miracles. If you're interested in having me speak at your parish, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, click on the contact tab, and you can get a hold of me that way. Maybe I'll be speaking in a parish in your area coming soon. So the question for this week is a good one. It's one that we haven't had before on the show. The question is, what does it mean that a crisis or other illness cannot produce the cure in a true medical healing? And that comes to us from Tim W. Well, thanks, Tim, for your question. And he is, of course, referring to the Lambertini criteria. And that's the famous criteria used in the Vatican, looking at the potential miracles for potential saints, and at Lourdes, looking at those miracles that are claimed by people who bathe in the waters of Lourdes. And Prospero Lambertini, who was an Italian cardinal born in the 1600s, his rule book, his criteria, is still used by the church today. And in brief summary, it must be a serious illness, not liable to go on its own. It must be an instantaneous, complete, and lasting cure, and there can be no medical treatment that relates to the cure, and there can be no crisis or other illness that creates the cure. And so Tim here is asking the question about what about that last criteria? It's not commonly referred to, but the idea is that there can be no other illness or other situation that sort of knocks out the first illness or replaces it. So it can't be considered a cure if a second illness comes along, perhaps a worse illness. So that doesn't count for a miraculous cure if a new disease shows up. So thank you so much, Tim, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the calendar year. And of course, we all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. And we're talking about feast days, anniversaries of miracles or other big events, or the building of a basilica on a place. For every day, there's a different way Mary's honored all around the world. And so for today's date, April 20th, we've got our Sorrowful Mother of the College. And that's a place that I was just recently at in Quito in Ecuador in the year 1906. And the story goes that in the refectory of the Jesuit College of St. Gabriel, on the night of April 20th, 1906, an oleograph, an image of the Virgin of Sorrows, hanging on the wall, began to open and shut its eyes in front of 35 boarding students and two monks. And the prodigious image was transferred to the school chapel, where the prodigy recurred six more times. Skeptics and believers alike testified to the occurrence, and after a canonical investigation that consulted physicists, chemists, physicians, and theologians, church authorities declared that this was worthy of belief, and the image was canonically crowned on April 22nd, 1956, during the 50th anniversary celebrations. And so that is Nuestra Señora del Colegio, or Sorrowful Mother of the College, in Quito in Ecuador for the year 1906. And for more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the page 365dayswithmary.com. You can download the free app, 365 Days with Mary, available from the iOS App Store. Or you can join the Facebook page and any of the 10,000 followers who get a different Marian title on their Facebook page each and every day. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. This is something we do. It connects to my television series, which airs on EWTN on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and also my book of the same title, They Might Be Saints, which is available at EWTNRC.com, the religious catalog. My opinion, it's my best book. On Saturday, April 13th, the Holy Father Francis received an audience his Most Reverend Eminence Cardinal Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. During the audience, the Pope authorized this dicastery to promulgate a new decree related to the martyrdom of the servants of God, Cayetano Clausella Balve, a diocesan priest born on August 5th, 1863, in Sabadell in Spain. He was killed out of odium fidei, out of hatred for the faith, on August 15th, 1936, near that same location. And Antonio Torch Rexax, a layman and family man, born on March 28th, 1895, near Barcelona, and killed in odium fidei, out of hatred of the faith, in December 1936, in Montcada in Spain. And according to the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints website, Father Gaetano was born in 1863, and he was a chaplain to a retirement home. He was shot in the back by militiamen in the early hours in August 15th, 1936, 10 days after his 73rd birthday. and a layman and father of 11, Antonio Tort. He was born in Barcelona in 1895. He was attacked by armed men for harboring religious in his home. And on the night of December 3rd to 4th in 1936, his house was ransacked and sacred images destroyed. He was tortured in a convent that was converted into a prison, then shot dead near the Montcada Cemetery. And so we have two new martyrs. They are currently blessed. With one miracle, one more miracle, they will be declared Saint Cayetano and Saint Antonio. We always like to keep you up to date with those people on the path to sainthood, those people who are moving along from servant of God, venerable, to blessed, to saint. And so we gave you that update there. But we also like to talk about the might-be saint of the day, the person whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day in the calendar. So for today's date, April 20th, we've got the memorial of Blessed Chiara Bossata, who lived in Italy from 1858 to 1887. And the story goes that she was born on May 27, 1858, in Pianello dell'Orio in Italy, as Dina Bossata. And she's the daughter of Alexander Bossata and Rosa Masolci. And her father was a silk manufacturer and died when the girl was still young. She studied with the Daughters of Charity at the age of 13, and she began a novitiate in the Cannosians, but felt that their charism was not what she was called to do. So she returned home and with her sister joined the Daughters of Mary and worked at a charity hospice. And she served neglected elderly people and children, and she was a teacher to the children at the hospice and the co-founder of the Daughters of St. Mary of Providence she became with her sister. And St. Luigi Guanella, she took the name Chiara, or Claire in English, and she worked at the spiritual formation of the sisters. She died on April 20th, 1887, in Pianello dell'Orio, in Como, in Italy, of natural causes. She was declared venerable on September 1st, 1988, by Pope John Paul II, and that same pope beatified her on April 21st, 1991, in Rome. And that is Blessed Chiara Bossata. With one more miracle, she will be known as Saint Chiara. And for those people who want to check out the series They Might Be Saints, it airs every week on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. This coming episode on Wednesday, April 24th, They Might Be Saints, is Bishop Frederick Barriga, one of my favorite episodes. And it's a story of trekking across Michigan's wilderness earned him the nickname the Snowshoe Priest. But his heroic virtue brought the gospel to Native Americans and immigrant miners, and that may earn Bishop Barriga sainthood. And so check that one out on Wednesday, April 24th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on They Might Be Saints on EWTN. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Bob and Maureen Digan about the miracle used toward the canonization of Saint Faustina. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Tomorrow is Divine Mercy Sunday. And of course, when we talk about Divine Mercy, we can't help but talk about that great, great saint, Saint Faustina Kowalska. And I'm so excited to be traveling to Poland myself here in a couple weeks, and I'll be able to visit her tomb and all the places where Saint Faustina walked and lived. So I'm so excited to be there myself. And of course, in every canonization cause, we all know, people who listen to this show, we talk about the sainthood process, the need for two miracles, one for beatification and one for canonization. And St. Faustina was no different. And there are two incredible miracles coming out of the United States that were used to propel her to sainthood. And we're so excited today to talk about an absolutely remarkable miracle. We're talking today with Bob and Maureen Digan from Massachusetts, talking to us about the miracle that they received that led to St. Faustina's canonization. Welcome to the program today, Bob and Maureen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you both here on the phone today, and this is a wonderful occasion, of course, with Divine Mercy Sunday being tomorrow. And so take us back to those days. And I know this was some time ago now. And for people who don't know, this miracle, I believe, happened over 40 years ago. And so while I'm sure that it is something that gets replayed in your mind and your memory over the years, take us back, if you would, to those times leading up to the miracle. What was Maureen especially going through at that time?
I was going through a very difficult time. I was angry with God. I really didn't pray very much, and I didn't want to hear about God. I thought I could do it all on my own, Super Maureen.
And Bob, for you, what was your understanding, or how did you experience what your wife was going through at this time? And what, from a medical perspective, what were some of the difficulties that were being experienced?
Well, it was extremely frustrating. It was constantly going from doctor's offices and then being hung up in a hospital for periods of time.
I found that very difficult because nobody at the age I was at then wanted to be in the hospital. And I was in the hospital a lot, and I was in terrible pain. And that makes it a very difficult life when you're in that much pain and in and out of hospitals.
But just to rewind, you lived a normal life.
Yeah, I lived a normal life before I got lymphedema. And then I played sports, and then all of a sudden one morning I woke up with my leg very swollen, and it ended up being lymphedema, and that's how I got it.
What are some of the symptoms that one experiences with lymphedema?
Swelling, terrible swelling of the area. I had it in the legs, so it was my leg was very swollen. And painful, very painful. And it would get like infections, so it would be red, hot, and infected.
Sounds very frustrating and difficult. And Bob, for you, what inspired you to, of course, you went to doctor visit upon doctor visit to help your wife and to get her some alleviation of this suffering. What made you turn to St. Faustina or to have the idea to approach the Divine Mercy Shrine there?
Well, I just happened to see a little article in a flyer that mentioned about the movie. This was right after the ban was lifted in 1978. And so I felt very inspired that this was extremely important. And so I went to go see the movie, and then I was very inspired by the whole message. And this was something definitely to look into.
And so what did you do next? Did you call the shrine? Did you visit the shrine there in Stockbridge?
Yes. We got a magazine that came to the house. For some reason, we were on somebody's list. And I looked at this and I said, this is a good answer. So let me contact the shrine and get some more information. And it was at a time that critical point with Maureen's declining health and also our son Bobby's as well. And so we went up there looking for a relic. And, of course, that time, Sister Faustina's cause was still under investigation and she was not yet raised to the honors of the altar, there wasn't any relics to be had.
And so what inspired you actually then to take a pilgrimage, a trip to the tomb of St. Faustina in Poland? Of course, it's one thing to contact the shrine here in the United States and to learn more about St. Faustina and perhaps seek her out in prayer. But what caused you, what inspired you to actually get on a plane and go to Poland? And Maureen, how did you feel about that idea of going to Poland?
Well, in the beginning, I thought Bob was crazy. I thought he was turning into a religious fanatic. I thought, who wants to go to Poland, of all places, and for healing? I really didn't believe in healings at that time, unfortunately. So it was very difficult.
And so, Bob, how did you pull it off? How did you convince Maureen to go, and who went with you on the trip?
It wasn't easy, believe me. Basically, I felt inspired that for some reason God was calling us to something. I did not know what it was, and actually, I wrote to my spiritual director and said, why do I have these inspirations, and yet I feel like I'm imprisoned in my own house. We had no social life. There was just constantly hospitalizations. Maureen had over 60 operations and attempts to try to relieve her suffering and to reduce the swelling in the leg to the point that her leg had to be amputated all the way to the hip. And so one evening in prayer, I believe that especially in the state of a world situation, there must be some key element that would touch upon everyone, no matter what religion they are, and that was God's mercy. Mm. So with that inspiration, we went to Stockbridge to see the late Father Serafin, who was the postulator for the cause of Sister Faustina, and I presented to him these inspirations and to be challenged. You know, were they coming from God or was this wishful thinking?
And so tell us about the trip to Poland. You went there and you went on the pilgrimage with the fathers there from the Divine Mercy. And when you approached the shrine there, when you approached the tomb of St. Faustina, tell us about the sequence of events that happened there.
Okay, well, before we left, I mentioned to Father Serafin that we should go to Poland to the tomb of Sister Faustina. I believe we were being led there. Mm-hmm. And I was so convinced that he says, are you sure about this? I said, well, that's why I want to have you come along to be the witness to the miracles. Notice the plural, miracles, for Maureen and Bobby. He says, okay, well, let me see if I get permission. So he did. So to make a long story short, after all kinds of problems, our direct flight there was canceled. We shifted over to a different airline, got bounced all over the place. And finally, when we got to the tomb, her tomb was, she was exhumed, and then her remains were brought in the back of the church because she was not yet recognized for the honors of the altar yet. That was still under investigation. And so the evening of March 28, 1981, we were there praying with the end of a special novena for this private pilgrimage that began back in the shrine is when the novena started. And as we were praying the chaplet there, we heard a young woman's voice in back of the church. We looked out, and we didn't see anyone. So we thought, okay. So then as we were praying, we heard the voice again. And we thought, well, it was nice. Too bad she couldn't join us. Where is she? Couldn't find her. So we checked the whole shrine out. And then we heard the voice again the third time. And I went to look out, and Father says, leave her alone. She is praying with us. So I didn't mean to be disrespectful, but I said, okay, Father, if you know who she is, where is she hiding? And he says, you can't see her. That's Sister Faustina. And so then when we were at the tomb, that was the conclusion of that novena that began back on the shrine. Mm-hmm. And then Maureen offered this very wonderful mystical prayer.
If you, Sister Faustina, if you're going to heal me, then do it and do it now. I wasn't even nice. I was kind of sarcastic.
And were your prayers answered?
Yes,
they
were.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. It was a little scary in the beginning because if you don't really believe in miracles and yet you ask for one but not really thinking it's ever going to happen and all of a sudden it happened, it's scary, you know, because I didn't have the faith I should to say, thank you, Jesus. I had the faith to question them and think, okay, Jesus, what are you doing to me now?
Yeah, absolutely amazing. You were healed at the shrine there in Poland, and that was the miracle that was recognized by Rome in advancement of the canonization cause of St. Faustina. And fast-forwarding all these years, it's been 40 years since your incredible healing. Of course, you've been able to share your story with the world time and time again on EWTN and otherwise, and this has been such inspiration for so many people who hear your story. How has this affected your life of faith throughout the years?
It makes your faith stronger because, you know, it's not you that did anything. You know, it's the Lord that healed me and was working through me as an instrument so others would know. And I think it makes it a little easier for people to believe when it's just an ordinary person who didn't have strong faith and yet they were healed.
I like to bring up a point on that. You know, we often hear, well, your faith has saved you. Your faith, if you only had faith, things would happen. Well, we really don't know the love that God has for us and his mercy. I point out in St. Luke's Gospel, there was a woman who just lost her son, and she was in bitter agony. And the compassion of our Lord, he healed. He brought back to life this woman's son. Now, someone would say, well, did she have faith? Did somebody else have faith? No, it was the compassion of God that he saw the suffering of this woman and he went to relieve it. I mean, yes, we do need faith, but God is beyond all that.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you, Bob and Maureen Dygan, for joining us on today's program, talking to us about your amazing miracle through the intercession of St. Faustina, leading to her canonization cause and leading people from around the world to be aware of God's message of mercy. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Thank you for having us. God bless you.
You have a DVD that we made that is offered through EWTN to the bookstore. By the way, it's called In the Name of Miracles.
Thank you so much. Well, we're so grateful to you, Bob and Maureen Dygan, for joining us on today's program and for telling us about St. Faustina. God bless you.
God bless you, and thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today, Elizabeth Ficicelli, talking to us about St. Bernadette, and Bob and Maureen Dygan, talking to us about the miracle used toward the canonization of St. Faustina. Check out my program, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Paray-le-Monial. I'll be visiting Paray-le-Monial in France when St. Margaret Mary Ellicott first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus in the Sacred Heart. I'll be exploring the origins of this cherished devotion, and that'll be Saturday, April 20th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It's one of my favorite episodes. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.